Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to Dave Wiedekind, president of Art Park. Art Park is a renowned cultural venue located on the scenic Niagara River Gorge in Western New York and offers a unique blend of art, nature, and community. Established in 1974, it hosts a variety of performances, festivals, and events that attract global talent and diverse audiences. Dave Wiedekind joined Art Park in 2018 as Director of Marketing and Sales, bringing expertise in performing arts marketing, sales, programming, sponsorship, and development. He was promoted to Vice President of Concerts and Marketing in 2021, Vice President in 2022, and President in November 2024 after a national search. Prior to Art Park, Dave was Director of Marketing for the University at Buffalo Center for the Arts and Associate Director of Marketing at Chase Performing Arts Center. He serves on the Board of Directors of Musical Fair Theater and is past President of Arts Services Incorporated. He holds an MBA from the University of Buffalo and a BS in Business Administration from SUNY Fredonia. In this interview, Dave and I speak about the history of Art Park, what the next 50 years will hold for the organization, and how the venue is actually closer than you think. I hope you enjoy my interview with Dave.
Dave Wiedekind, great to chat with you today. How are you?
Oh, it's great. Great to be here.
Fantastic. I'd love to start off by asking, are you from Western New York originally?
I am. I was born and raised in Amherst, New York.
Now, I know you've worked for many arts organizations in Western New York for many, many years. What drew you to work in these organizations?
It kind of goes back to, it was a couple of moments. I mean, I went through Amherst schools and I was, I played saxophone, was active in the band and all that, and always really enjoyed that. And then in high school, had a great music teacher, and we had a group called the Amherst Dixieland Band. And we actually, in addition to being kind of like a performing group in the high school, we went out and started booking our own gigs and playing around Amherst and playing like block parties and ice cream socials and all that kind of thing. So it was kind of like, then I was one of like kind of like the co-manager of the band. So I got kind of an early taste of that. And then it kind of came back around when I went to Fredonia, and I was there as a business major, but, obviously Fredonia, well known for music as well. And I was really interested in continuing to play and eventually got into Fredonia Jazz Ensemble. And while I was in the band, I became the business manager as well, because that was an entirely student-run group. So, you know, as I was kind of thinking about everything, I was like, well, I'm doing my business studies, but I'm really drawn to the music side of things. But I knew I wasn't going to try to make a living as a sax player. So how do I put these two things together? So that led me to going and meeting Jefferson Westwood, who runs the Rockefeller Arts Center. And we, you know, I just started learning about what arts administration is. And then I had an internship there. And then I just went on and I interned everywhere in Western New York. I had, at the Buffalo Philharmonic and at Rockwell Hall at Buff State, or Buff State University, as it's called now. Shays Performing Arts Center, Chautauqua Institution. And it was at Shays that I landed right out of after graduating. And then led to my first full-time job. So that's really how I think I got drawn to the business. And I'm glad I found it when I did. And I'm glad that I figured out a way to combine these two worlds. So I don't have to potentially go through all the trials and tribulations of being a working musician. But I can still be very close to the art and experiencing the joy of that, and then also bringing it to others. And
it's amazing. First of all, I currently teach at Fredonia, and Jefferson Westwood is but moments away from me. So it's amazing. I sort of hope that is ear itched or something when you said his name. But That really is incredible. I often say to my students when I teach too that I think that show business is such kind of an apt way of referring to the entertainment business. And I say because sometimes it's about the show and sometimes it's really about the business of, you know, needing to sort of manage your own work or book your own gigs, as you were kind of talking about in your early career. And I think it's amazing that that led you kind of forward outside of Fredonia. Why are arts organizations important to a robust economy?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of things, right? There's there are a lot of us of all different sizes, right? So, you know, combined, we have a lot of impact. We have a significant economic impact. And arts organizations largely employ a local workforce. I mean, we have visiting artists, we have touring artists that come through, but for the most part, day to day, or and especially in smaller organizations, you're employing local stagehands, actors, actresses, musicians, choreographers, dancers. I mean, all of that is many times, and of course, the administrative staff, the box office workers. I mean, everything is really employing a local workforce. So we're important for that. And then we're here, you know, we don't just pass through. We're here year round. We become an important member of the community, right? So we're a community resource. We provide a service back to the community. We give, you know, benefit the local, you know, the hotels, the restaurants, what have you, with, you know, pre and post event spending. You know, that I think kind of gets lost in the shuffle, because I think a lot of times in our current society, we put so much emphasis on large scale sporting events and stadiums and arenas and, you know, and, but it's like a lot of that, you know, those kind of venues have impact, but they're only a few times a year, perhaps. A lot of the money is largely being made by athletes and ownership that spend it elsewhere and may not even live here year round. So there's a lot, but we're here every day of the year, right? So I think that's kind of an important thing, and that you know, the impact that arts make. But I also think we add, there's kind of like a, there isn't necessarily a monetary value attached to this, but we add to the quality of life. So we give, you know, not only places for people to kind of the creative expression, but we also provide a respite. We provide escape from the stresses of reality. You can go in and take in a performance and just kind of get away from it all. And it's all part of, it all leads to vibrant communities. And so vibrant arts organizations draw people to that, and they add, you know, just to the quality of living in any given town, big or small.
You worked in marketing for many years before your current position, is that correct?
Yes, it's pretty much right. I started in development, then kind of switched to marketing after 3 years, and then it just keeps evolving.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I'm laughing. It's like an amazing sort of person to come to your position to have worked in both development and marketing. That's like the ultimate sort of secret skill set to work in arts administration. How is marketing an art form?
I'll tell you, it always keeps you on your toes, because like anything, we're competing for attention. And we're competing for things that we wish that we can't always make more of. We can't make more of time. We can't make more disposable income necessarily, right? So, and in our society, you know, our attention spans have gotten shorter. We're more distracted. We have more disruptions. And we have more options than ever before. You know, we're not, I would say I'm not just competing with another arts organization or something going on down the street. I'm competing with Netflix. I'm competing with, you know, just video games, you know, anything that people could choose to spend, you know, on their free time on. And knowing that, you know, people still value the arts, but I think that their outlook towards it is changing. And it's not, you know, maybe for a lot of people, not seen as so critical as it was to maybe a prior generation or two. So, or the way they want to consume it is changing. And then certainly the way they find out about things is changing too. And that's probably one of the marketers' biggest challenges, is that we don't have the budgets of like a Coca-Cola. You know, we can't afford to be everywhere always. You know, we can't be Geico. We can't advertise to you morning, noon, and night, right? We have very limited budgets, so we have to be very strategic about the way we reach people and the way we engage them. And it's and many times we're promoting something to them that they've never heard of, and they're not even sure that they are even wanted, or if they, you know, how we have the work of trying to explain something. You know, it's like if I have a popular concert, if I'm, you know, promoting Bonnie Raitt, a lot of people already know who Bonnie Raitt is. I don't have to really do much explanation. They probably know who she is. They probably have seen her before. They think she's great. They'll be there. They'll buy a ticket, right? But if you're doing something like a contemporary theater piece or a modern dance company or something like that, that aren't like top of mind for many people, you have the extra work of explaining what this is and then trying to compel people to come and experience the art as well. So modern arts marketers wear a lot of hats. And and again, it's always comes down to resources, and we have small teams and we have small budgets, and we have to be very creative and engaging to keep people coming in.
Thank you. For those that don't know, can you give us a little bit of the history of Art Park and let us know why it's so special?
So Art Park is a very interesting place. So we actually just had our 50th anniversary this year. It was started in 1974. By Earl Bridges, and who was in the state legislature, and was seeking something like a few years before they had built the Saratoga Performing Arts Center in Saratoga, New York, and they were looking for kind of like Western New York's version of that. So they had this idea to create this kind of unique space that has this theater. We have our main stage theater, but it's sitting on 150-acre parkland, New York State Park, and was developed very early on as kind of this very creative place that would have this theater and music and dance, really kind of all of the art forms are represented in this huge stage that we have, and which holds 4,000 people. You know, 2,000 seated, and then another 2,000 on the lawn. And at the time, it was like the largest stage in New York State. This was a pretty massive place. But then they also engaged these very creative young artists that were visual artists. And it was kind of regarded as like the birthplace of the land art movement, where, you know, the approach was visual arts were created in a very democratic way. People could, you know, the audiences could come and interact with the artists as they're creating. Maybe they became part of the art. Sometimes it was performance art. Sometimes it was more like traditional visual art. There was all forms of it. And a lot of young people were drawn to this because it was a very kind of like a, how would I describe it? It was almost kind of like a Woodstock of art. So it was a pretty wild place. There's a lot of really, you know, avant-garde thinking going on here, but they were given kind of permission to just do whatever, right? And there was a significant budget from New York State trying to write a lot of this. So not only were we able to pay for all of these artist residencies to basically live on the grounds through the course of the summer, we also had major touring performers, national and international performers, coming through the stages, and you could go to those shows for like a couple dollars, you know. So the subsidy was pretty incredible, and it made a lot of things possible. Of course, you know, through the 70s and then the 80s, that continued, but then once leadership in Albany saw things differently and they started cutting back on that subsidy and that budget. New York State was going through challenging times. A lot of that was eliminated. So Art Park was for a period of time in the late 80s into the 90s was in a very bad place. And then they hired George Osborne, who came in the, I can't recall the exact date he came in, but with kind of his resume had a lot of kind of like turnarounds, right? So he was tasked with like getting this going again. And then he had this idea to start this concert series, this amphitheater concert series, which called Tuesdays in the Park at that time. And they were like these free outdoor class, primarily classic rock concerts that just put this place back on the map in a huge way, to its detriment, because the park was really overrun by way too many people. So obviously things had to kind of pull back and reorganize a bit and started charging for admission and tickets and all that. So that naturally brought things under control. And then when he retired, I believe 2016, they hired Sonia Clark, and she was tasked with kind of like re-engaging the creative artistic side of things, right? So all of this has been, it's an interesting observation of Art Park, is that not every organization ever gets a second chance or even a third chance, right? So we've been able to evolve and change and you know, behave much differently than a traditional arts organization, because at the root of it, we are still a park. So we can find creative ways to engage with the land. We can have small performances, we can have big things, we can have, you know, you name it. We've done everything here, especially through the pandemic, when we found ourselves we were a drive-in movie theater for a few months. So we had, just exciting place to be, and it's creative but it still keeps that mission of serving all ages. We're here as a service to the people of the community. I think a point of pride for Western New York.
Art Park just celebrated its 50th anniversary, as you just mentioned. Why was this anniversary so important to commemorate?
Well, like I was saying, you know, the Art Park almost didn't make it, you know, probably more than once, right? So it was because when you're accustomed to getting that stream of funding from the state, it doesn't really encourage necessarily really smart management, right? And, you know, maybe there's some decisions that were made that maybe weren't the best decisions. What we've heard too, and what I learned a lot in the time I've been here since 2018 now, is that Art Park means a lot to a lot of people. And especially now, like a lot of our board members and our longtime donors and supporters, they were here at the beginning. And they remember coming to opening night with their parents in 1974. And those first few seasons where it made such a lasting impact on them. And they, you know, were either it inspired a career in the arts for them, or it inspired just kind of lifelong love of the arts. They really feel lucky to be part of that. So I think when we talk about a 50-year-old organization, you want to look back and see, like, what is the impact we had and what's our legacy here? So we felt like this is the perfect time to look back at that, but know that we can never recreate that, because that was a point in time. And we don't want to always just be looking backwards. We want to look forward, too. So it seemed like kind of a perfect place for us to be in to really celebrate that 50th, because we not only, you know, had fun, you know, recalling some of the things that happened and looking back on that history and bringing a few performers back. Like, we had Bonnie Raitt, who was here opening year. She played this past summer. But we're also looking forward, because Art Park, unfortunately, bad timing. Speaking of bad timing, we had created a master plan. And that was signed off on by our board in December of 2019. And of course, we know what happened a couple of months later. So things sat on the shelf, you know. So it's been kind of, there's a few kind of like false starts with getting things going again. But now we feel like we've put the proverbial train back on the track here. So there are very bold ideas and ambitions for where Art Park goes from now, right? So that, so, you know, when we were talking about it, and as I would like talk about the 50th anniversary, I would always talk about we're looking back and we're looking forward. So, because people always want to know what's next. We have our memories of things we've experienced and we've enjoyed, but we're, hey, what's coming next? What's coming next season? You know, it's like the number one question I always get, right? So we have to be always thinking forward as an arts organization. And we also, we think it's also a good, another good reason to remind people about our 50th anniversary is that sometimes people forget how long an organization has been around or how long, what a piece of their life it's been. And that it's no small feat to last that long. So, and so I think that that remind people, look at this amazing thing you have here. And I think sometimes when we look in Western New York, a lot of the attention goes to the arts organizations that are based in Erie County and Buffalo area. You've got, you know, you've got institutions like Shays Performing Arts Center, you've got the Philharmonic, you know, you've, so, the art museums and all that. So those have been around longer than we have. They had a very, probably a higher profile for a longer period of time, at least consistently. And sometimes I think Art Park gets kind of a little missed in the shuffle there, you know, and it's because we're in Niagara County. Niagara County is, doesn't have as large of a population. And because we're summer only, at least for our programming, where the park is open year round, but in the summer. So people tend to only think about Art Park as that summer place, right? So we are working to kind of expand that and grow that season so that we can be top of mind for people for a longer period of time during the year. So that's, you know, but it also reminding people we're not just the summer place. You can come here any day of the year. There might not be a performance going on, but you can take a beautiful walk along the gorge and admire the Niagara River and wave to Canada and what have you. But it's a very special place. And I think sometimes that gets lost because people only think of it as, oh, the place I go for concerts in July, right? So, so I mean, that's kind of like why we're celebrating this and remind people too that we're not, we received some support from New York State, but it's nowhere near what it was at its peak. And we run this, the events of this, of Art Park, on contributions and sponsorships and ticket sales and all the mix of that. So I think it's also kind of a common thing. People just assume, well, you're part of a state park, my taxpayer dollars cover that, but that's not the case.
My final question is, in another, let's say, 50 years, what do you hope people are talking about? Kind of what happened at Art Park in year 50 to year 100? What's your maybe vision for the future? What you hope people remember or continue to talk about the organization?
The first, you know, kind of the big goal right now is to revitalize the venues. It needs significant upgrades and updates. It needs to, it was a great venue for 1974 purposes. It, you know, is overdue for, and to approach, you know, get this opportunity to look at the venue in a more, much more forward thinking way. You know, how are we using energy? How are we, you know, lighting instruments, sound, what are audiences looking for? You know, how do we make things more adaptable? Because I think what a lot of arts institutions and particularly theaters struggle with is they have these big venues that are fixed and all these fixed seats, and you know, it can be as people's, you know, interests in different art forms ebb and flow. They can, it can become very challenging to fill the seats, right? So, so, you know, how can we look at this and you like imagine venues within the venue and be more creative in the way we use that? And then look at our outdoor spaces too, and what can we do there? And how can we provide structure, but also maintain the flexibility so we can adapt as audiences adapt? Right. So because knowing that, you know, some people prefer a smaller scale, more intimate experience. Others love being out there with 9,000 people, and that's what they really get excited about. So how do we remain flexible? And how do we better embrace the fact that we are in this amazing natural park, right? How do we, you know, kind of, we talk about art, nature, and culture when it comes to Art Park, but I'm very interested in seeing how much more we expand that. And I'm also thinking a lot about going back to how impactful this place was on young people. And I'm really interested in seeing, like, how do we really, really recapture that energy so that, you know, children who are in the art camps this summer, you know, in 20 years are putting their own children in that art camp. And, you know, in 20 years from then, are remembering us in their will, you know, whatever it be, right? So, and you're just thinking about, like, the legacy lifetime of a patron, and that we do indeed serve everyone. And I'm thinking about, you know, making more connections with Niagara Falls and the city, and, you know, a city that has its challenges. How do we, you know, perhaps engage more children who only know, like, an urban environment, who, you know, can get involved in park, right? And so there's just so many, I mean, there's more ideas than there are time to execute them. But I think that looking at the next 50, knowing that we can't just stand still, that, you know, things will continue to change, other venues will open up, you know, consumer and patron interests will change, and the performers themselves will continue to evolve. And so how do we, as best we can, without having a crystal ball, best predict where this is going to go, and how do we keep ourselves nimble enough, right? And part of that too, and we're thinking a lot more about, is fundraising, because we, you know, we don't have an endowment. We don't have, like, this kind of this base of support, rainy day money put away, so to speak, right? So that we can ride these ups and downs, and so that we can utilize those funds raised to develop programming and to ensure future programming can continue and explore new ideas and new paths and underwrite and, you know, and be there to support the artists. Without the artists, we have nothing. We need them creating and bringing things to us and doing things on our grounds too. So so I'd say, you know, yeah, to summarize, it would be really investing in our venues, investing in our youth, and investing in ourselves and building a foundation for the future.
Thank you. If folks would like to support the organization, what's the best way that they can?
Well, we can just go to artpark.net, and we also have a membership program, and that's a little bit different, but you can then a kind of a standard donation, but it's a contribution to help Art Park. But then you can enjoy some numerous perks too, like, you know, pre-sale access to tickets and discounts and early access into the venue and, you know, skip the line kind of things too. So it's a new program we started a couple of years ago, and we're getting a great response to it.
Thank you very much. Those are my questions, but I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think if there was one thing I share is, you know, through the pandemic, if there was one upside to all of this, is that people rediscovered Art Park as a park. So they would come, you know, any day of the week and just enjoy the time here and just, you know, relax and, you know, take a picnic, walk the gorge trail. There's a lot of improvements being done to the trails over these last couple of years. So I encourage everyone to come and check those out too. Because Art Park, when there's not 9,000 people here all at once, is a much different place. So if 9,000 people isn't your thing, we have plenty of things for small groups or no groups at all, right? Just come and enjoy it. So I always like to remind people of that.
Thank you. It was so great talking to you today, Dave. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you this summer at Art Park.
All right, thank you.
Well, that was my interview with Dave Wiedekind. I hope you will consider visiting Art Park soon. Information about the organization, including their summer concert series, which will be announced over the next few months, is available at artpark.net. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like this show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.